we focused on Matthew chapter 5, verse 13, as we talked about Christ's injunction for his followers to be the salt of the earth. This morning, we're going to devote our attention to verses 14 through 16 of Matthew chapter 5. I'll begin by reading these four verses, Matthew 5, verses 13 through 16. In verse 13, Jesus says, "You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot." Then, in our text for this morning, Jesus says in verses 14 through 16, "You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." I've entitled the lesson, "Light It Up." Regarding this phrase, one source says, "Light it up" is a phrase synonymous with engage. It's used to command those with potential energy to exert their energies, that is, going to maximum over afterburners, rather, opening fire or going to 7,000 RPMs, whatever you consider lock and load or whatever, a variety of ideas there. In this lesson, I'm using it to suggest that Christians are to engage the world, that Christians are to light up the world of darkness. In this passage, the two metaphors Jesus used to illustrate the nature of the kingdom's calling were common household items that every Jew would have used and had on hand. Every house in Palestine had some salt. And every house in Palestine would have had a lamp to chase away the darkness. Christ called his followers to be the salt, to hold off sin's rot, and the light to penetrate its darkness. Christians need to be wary of the potential dangers of associating with those of the world, but Jesus did not call on his followers to separate themselves completely from the world. Speaking of his disciples in his prayer in John 17, verses 14 and 15, Jesus said, "I have given them your word, and the world has hated them, for they are not of the world any more than I am of the world. My prayer is not that you take them out of the world, but that you protect them from the evil one." To the chagrin of the religious leaders, Jesus spent his time among the common people, with all their troubles and distress. Luke 15, verses 1 and 2 tells us that tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." In John 15, verses 19 and 20, Jesus told his disciples, "If you belonged to the world, it would love you as its own. As it is, you do not belong to the world, but I have chosen you out of the world. That is why the world hates you. Remember what I told you. A servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will persecute you also. If they obeyed my teaching, they will obey yours also." To those who would follow him, Jesus said, "You are the light of the world." But Christians are not a light in and of themselves, simply do not produce their own light. Over 700 years before Jesus was born, the prophet Isaiah said that the Messiah would be a great light for those living in darkness. Matthew mentions this in Matthew chapter 4, verses 13 through 16. "Leaving Nazareth," we read, "Jesus went and lived in Capernaum, which was by the lake in the area of Zebulun and Naphtali. to fulfill what was said through the prophet Isaiah. Then quoting Isaiah 9, verses 1 and 2, the text says, "Land of Zebulun and land of Naphtali, the way of the sea beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles, the people living in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of the shadow of death, a light has dawned." And in John chapter 8, verse 12, Jesus said, "I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life." When Jesus spoke these words, he was using an expression which was quite familiar to the Jews. They themselves spoke of Jerusalem as a light to the Gentiles. They spoke of famous rabbis as a lamp of Israel. So the way in which the Jews use this expression will give us a key to the way in which Jesus also used it. The light with which the nation shone, or the light with which the man of God shone, was a borrowed light. It's the same with the Christian. Just as the moon does not produce its own light, but simply reflects light from the sun, in the same way, citizens of the kingdom, Christians, must shine with the reflection of Christ's light. And so when Jesus commanded his followers to be the lights of the world, he demanded nothing less than that they should be like he himself. In Ephesians 5, verse 8, the Apostle Paul said, "You were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light." There are various responsibilities in this order to be the lights of the world. First, Christians must be visible. When Jesus says that a city or a town on a hill cannot be hidden, and when he mentions putting a lamp on a lampstand, the import of these statements is that the obvious purpose of a light is that it is something which is meant to be seen. Often cities were built of white limestone, and they gleamed in the sunlight, and they could not be easily hidden. Christianity is something which, again, is meant to be seen. As someone has said, there can be no such thing as secret discipleship. Either the secrecy destroys the discipleship, or the discipleship destroys the secrecy. The houses in Palestine were very dark. They only had one little circular window, something like maybe a foot and a half across. The lamps they used were saucer-like bowls filled with oil, with the wick floating in the oil. Needs to be said that this Christianity, this light, should not be visible only within the church. Jesus says, "You are the light of the world." He does not say, "You are the light in the church assembly." Our Christianity should be visible in the way we treat a clerk or a cashier across the counter. Should be visible in the way we treat a waiter or a waitress in a restaurant. In the way we treat our fellow students and our neighbors. In the way we treat our employees or co-workers, in the way we serve our employer. It should be visible in the way we play a game, the way we drive a car, in the daily language we use, the places we frequent and the places we refuse to frequent, in the literature we read and in the things we choose as entertainment. A Christian should be just as much a Christian in the factory, the workshop, the schoolroom, the hospital, the kitchen, the golf course, the playing field, and behind the wheel as he is in the assembly. Again, Jesus did not say, "You are the light of the church." He said, "You are the light of the world." Jesus said, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works." Jesus clarified that this light is our good works. In the Greek, there are three different adjectives translated good. The two most commonly used words are the words agathos and kalos. The word agathos simply defines something as good in quality. The word kalos means that something is not only good, but that it's also charming, beautiful, attractive. For example, a cake may taste good, agathos, but it may be ugly to look at. Or the cake may be kalos, which means it is both good, tastes good, and it's also beautiful. The word used here in verse 16 is kalos. Jesus is saying that the good deeds of the Christian must not only be good in quality, but they must also be attractive. There must be a certain attractiveness to the Christian's goodness. It's been observed by some that the tragedy of so much so-called Christian goodness is that in it there is an element of harshness, coldness, and austerity, an attitude of condescension. That's not true goodness. That's arrogance and self-righteousness. There's a goodness which attracts, and there's a goodness which repels. There's a charm in true Christian goodness, which makes it a lovely thing. The basic purpose of a light is to shine, to give direction, and sometimes to warn. On the estuary of a river, we may see the line of lights which marks the channel for the ships to sail in safety. See the same thing on a runway or an airstrip. A light is a guide. The world needs guiding lights. Some people want to be rich. Some people want to be famous. But we need more good people than rich and famous people. And there's nothing wrong with being intelligent or well-educated. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be intelligent or well-educated. But which would you choose for a neighbor? Someone who's extremely intelligent and well-educated but is mean, nasty, and dishonest? Or someone who is of average intelligence and education but is a good person? Would you rather have a neighbor who's rich and famous but who is mean, nasty, and arrogant? Or somebody who's a nobody by the world's standards but a decent, honest, and good person? There are enough rich people, famous people, educated people. We need more good people. Someone may say, well, why can't you be both? Or all the above, rich, famous, intelligent, good-looking, well-educated. I had to throw that in there. And also good. Well, you can. It's possible. But especially regarding wealth and fame, often in the efforts to be rich and famous, one ceases to be good. And if too much emphasis is placed on intelligence or education, pride and arrogance often become the dominating characteristics, and goodness is sacrificed in the effort to attain those goals. Also, a light can often be a warning light. A light is often the warning which tells us to stop doing something when there's danger ahead. It's sometimes the Christian's duty to be the warning light to others around him. This is often hard to do in a way which will not do more harm than good. But one of the greatest tragedies in life is for someone, especially a young person, to come up and say, I would never have been involved in the situation I now find myself in if you had only said something earlier. Of course, if we had said something earlier, they might not have listened, but that does not remove our responsibility to say something. Christians are lights in a dark world. Paul said in Philippians 2, verses 14 and 15, do everything without grumbling or arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a warped and crooked generation. Then you will shine among them like stars in the sky. In fact, the world would be in total darkness without the children of God. The salt and light metaphors which Jesus used have much to teach us about our Christian responsibilities in the world. There's a fundamental difference between Christians and non-Christians, between the church, God's people, and the world. Probably the greatest tragedy of the church throughout its long and checkered history has been its constant tendency to conform to the prevailing culture rather than being the salt and light as Christ directed. In our passage, the statements Christ made in the Greek begin with the emphatic pronoun you. This means that what he said fundamentally was, you and you only are the salt of the earth. You and you only are the world's light. This stresses individual responsibility. No matter what others do, no matter what others may say, no matter what others are, you are to be this salt and light. You are salt, and so you must retain your saltiness and not lose your Christian tang. You are light, and so you must let your light shine and not conceal it in any way, whether by sin or by compromise, by laziness or by fear. One thing that salt and light have in common is that they give. They expend themselves. And so they are the opposite of any and every kind of self-centered religiosity. Nevertheless, the kind of service that each renders is different. In fact, their effects are complementary. The function of salt is largely negative. It prevents decay. The function of light is positive. It illuminates the darkness. So Jesus calls his disciples to exert a double influence on those with whom they come into contact. They are to exert a negative influence by arresting the decay, and they are to exert a positive influence by bringing light into the darkness. It's one thing to stop the spread of evil. It's another thing entirely to promote the spread of goodness, truth. We simply cannot live like the world, act like the world, talk like the world, and dress like the world, then expect to influence the world to do better. There was a monastic community of Essenes who had withdrawn from the world, and they lived down on the west side of the northern tip of the Dead Sea. They called themselves the Sons of Light, but they took no steps to let their light shine in the world. So in their monastery, if you will, their salt was as useless as the deposits on the shores of the nearby Dead Sea, and their light was as useless as a lamp under a bushel basket. This is entirely speculation, but one scholar thinks Christ may have glanced in their direction when he made this statement. How could they claim to be the sons of light when they refused to let their light shine to the world around them? The world is bad, and it needs salt. The world is dark, and it needs light. In fulfilling Christ's teachings, our role is to be both. In essence, we become salt and light as a result of living the Beatitudes. A Christian's character as described in the Beatitudes and a Christian's influence as defined in the salt and light metaphors are organically related to one another. Our influence depends on our character. Only by developing the character Jesus describes in the Beatitudes and only by becoming salt and light will we become what God would have us to be. In verse 16, Jesus said, "Let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven." We teach our children to sing, "This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine." And this is the way God will be glorified. When we are doing what God would have us do, when we are becoming the kind of people who shine forth the image of the Son of God, God will be glorified. In our text this morning, towards the beginning of his ministry, Jesus tells his disciples that if they let their lights shine so their good works are seen, their Father in heaven will be glorified. And at the end of his ministry in the upper room, Jesus expressed the same idea in similar words. He said, John 15, verse 8, "By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit, so you will be my disciples." When we embody the Beatitudes, when we live as the salt of the earth, and when we let our light shine before others, it brings blessings to ourselves, it brings salvation to others, and it ultimately brings glory to God. May that be our goal in our walk with the Lord. Let's sing the song that we've chosen.